If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Without further ado, I'm so excited to introduce this evening's guest, Jennifer Flanagan, the co-founder, president, and CEO of Actua, Canada's leading science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM, youth outreach organization. Can we give a big round of applause for Jennifer?
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So for more than 25 years, Jennifer has been an extraordinary force in changing the face of STEM in Canada and is one of the leading experts in technology equity, STEM education, and diversity and inclusion. She's also the most recent winner of the Veuve Clicquot's Bold Woman Award. So big round of applause as well. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. I'm super happy to be
straight
here.
Straight in from Ottawa.
Straight in from Ottawa, yes. The quiet city currently of Ottawa.
Yeah. So for everyone in the room and listening on this episode later, can you just tell me, like, what is the elevator pitch behind Actua, if you could kind of summarize it? Mm-hmm.
So I lately have been liking to paint a picture. So if you could imagine a future where every young person, so every kid in this country, has the skills and the confidence to achieve their full potential. And that's like a big, you know, motherhood apple pie statement, but if you think about that and how deeply that would impact every single economic and social measure that we have in this country, it's significant. So Actua is actually driving toward that reality. So for the past 25 years, every year we engage about 500,000 youth in 500 communities across the country in STEM programming. So that STEM programming is designed to build skills that prepare these youth for the future of work. And we all know that that is an incredibly unpredictable, very technically driven future of work. So we do that. We also are super obsessive about identifying and removing the barriers to entry. So who's not in STEM? Why are they not in STEM? So not only our national programs are really focused on those groups, so Indigenous youth, girls and young women, youth in rural remote communities facing socioeconomic issues. So we not only give programming to them to build those skills, but we also clear the path, change the system, remove the barriers, and we all know that those barriers have been there far too long.
Yeah, so doing the work. I mean, can you just give another round of applause, because that is so important. The work that you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's currently a lot of barriers around that.
That's right.
You know, when we talk about, I just want to like dump right into the deep end right here.
Okay.
We're living in a time right now where there's a lot of misinformation, pseudoscience is spreading faster than facts, where public trust in science is, you know, unraveling. And a lot of times the loudest voices in the rooms are sometimes the least informed. From, you know, anti-vaxxers to wellness influencers and even a lot of political candidates, science is being challenged, reframed, and in many cases, deliberately dismantled. In your view, from your POV and from the work that you're doing, how do you think people can be more critical of, you know, who is challenging science, but also why? Like, who stands to gain from, you know, when truth loses its credibility?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are spending, you know, we're a youth organization. We, you know, get kids excited about science and technology at a community level, but we also are paying very close attention to what's happening. It will very quickly, it already has started impacting our work in the sense that, you know, we in a long time haven't had to defend the value of science, right? We haven't had to explain why science is important. So typically I go out in the media and I talk to parents and teachers and about, like, way, you know, the value of hands-on learning, or, you know, the value of artificial intelligence, or, you know, other fields of science. But now We're actually going like right back to basics because I'm worried that there is a massive shakeup in the foundation of just why should everyone be scientifically literate? And I think, you know, we know that, that message is going to have deep impacts in this country. So the mis and disinformation is a whole other field, and we're doing a lot of work to educate and inform and sort of tool up kids so that they can identify that and know where to get, you know, where do they get the right information? How do they tell, you know, real from not real? But what we're quickly realizing, as you sort of said in your question, is it's not just the kids, right? It's their parents, it's their grandparents, it's their teachers. It's a massive issue and something that, you know, we're moving very quickly to respond to.
So when you see a headline like, you know, RFK wanting to solve, find the cure for autism by September, what do you tell the people in your audience when they have questions about these kinds of big splashy headlines that come up?
I mean, I tell them that is like a really excellent example of misinformation and disinformation. It's just not how science works. I wish it was. I wish we could just say, you know, we're gonna find the cure to cancer by September 1st. But it just isn't the way that it works. And in fact, my concern, I think everyone's concern is just, you know, that people will, it automatically increases distrust in science, right? So all these scientists who've been taking up all this money for all these years haven't been able to find, you know, what causes autism. And now, you know, our savior is coming in and going to figure that out. So it just, what's important is that we're out talking about, you know, what real science is and how we can, how important it is to really be critical of the information that's coming out.
Yeah. We tend to think of this a lot as an American issue, but Canada isn't immune either. So are we doing enough here from your perspective to also kind of protect that kind of critical, embrace the critical thinking and evidence-based kind of, research?
I mean, without getting too deep into the platforms of each political party, I think I feel a lot more optimistic about what's happening in this country. I don't think that means we aren't going to be impacted by what's happening in the U.S. But as far as I can see in the interactions that we've had, I mean, the federal government for the past 10 years has invested, you know, over $100 million in the work that we're doing. That's been unheard of in terms of any other government investing and recognizing the importance of the work. So I have not heard any kind of sort of anti-science or anti-research narratives. I think there's a lot of other things being talked about, and you know, we'll see, and we're going to watch very closely. But I feel optimistic regardless of the outcome that there will still be a recognition for the importance of basic science.
Yes, it's the least that we can ask for these days.
Yes.
What role do you think organizations like ACTRA play in defending, you know, critical thinking at a time when like a lot of facts feel like they can be like a negotiation point or something that can be debated?
I think it's why we do the work that we do. It's to develop, you know, everybody wants to know what are the skills of the future? Like, are basic skills that we've known forever going to be obsolete because of artificial intelligence? And the reality is that, you know, critical thinking, which has been around forever and will continue to be around forever, is the foundation of the skills that we're going to need. And that critical thinking is about, you know, is about processing information. It's about looking at problems from different angles and different perspectives. It's about really doing your homework to figure out, you know, where is this information coming from? Can I confirm this information? I think it goes without saying that that's going to continue to be critically important. The role our organization has is just to continue, again, these basic messages of this is how science impacts your life. This is what happens when science goes off the rails. Like, this is a life or death. We look at it as an emergency. Like, it's a life or death situation. If we have, you know, tens of thousands of people that are not vaccinated against diseases that we haven't seen in, you know, decades, that things are going to get real, real fast.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Despite the current kind of climate around all of the stuff that's happening and all the headlines that we're seeing, you know, you and your company and your team have remained laser focused on really empowering the next generation of leaders. You've made it your work. And so why has it been so important to, you know, reach young people with STEM education, especially in a time like now?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is that we know that, you know, the science, STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and math, in the way that we create and disseminate it, which is very holistic, it's very much based in solving real world problems, it's based in, you know, how the work impacts communities and, you know, our society at large. Doing work like that develops essential skills, right? So when kids get engaged in solving problems, they develop skills that will last them a lifetime and will be important irrespective of the field they choose to pursue. So that's really important. Our country depends on, you know, economic development in, you know, deeply scientifically, you know, areas of work. So we know we have big workforce issues. So that was part of it. The other part is that having a diversity of voices and a diversity of perspective around the table when you think through things like scientific discovery and innovation makes those results far better for everybody. So, you know, if we're leaving out big parts of the population, we don't have their perspective, we're gonna have, the science just isn't as good. The research isn't as good, the medicine isn't as good. So that's been really the focus of our work is youth have to get involved early in building these skills and know, understanding how science impacts their lives, and the diversity of perspective is paramount.
Yeah, because having a diversity of perspectives allows you to have a diversity of ways to solve unique problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, what would you say are kind of the real barriers to accessing STEM in Canada, particularly for Indigenous, racialized, or rural communities? Because that's also something that we need to talk about as well.
I mean, there are a lot of barriers and barriers that are different for each of those audiences. But, you know, if we talk about girls and young women, for example, which a lot of people think we have either solved or, you know, we've worked long enough and isn't it done? You know, there are so many messages that young girls and young women still receive about who can do science, who's good at science, you know, who has a place in science. They're still getting really negative messaging, whether it's unintentional or intentional. And so, you know, they have, all youth, regardless, all those groups that you mentioned, they are all born and, you know, when they're little, super creative and super imaginative, and they, you know, they play, they fail, they repeat, they do all the things we want them to do, and then, you know, society, like, life happens, and that sort of gets, those barriers get in the way. So for us, it's about working with each of those individual communities and for them to tell us, you know, what is their current reality. It's not us coming in with a solution, it's working to co-create whatever kind of program that meets the kids where they are in that community. And at the same time as we're delivering those programs, again, it's looking at what the barriers are too. Yeah. And you know, that could be a whole podcast in and of itself, but really trying to go through both at a, like, you know, global messaging and how science is messaged down to, you know, what courses are required to get into engineering at university. I mean, we're also thinking about those things from a policy perspective.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about accessing STEM, it's not only just being able to have a diversity of ways to solve challenges and problems, but it's also, you know, a tool for agency and social mobility as well. What is that? How do you see STEM being playing a role in terms of the way that we can navigate or people can access social mobility and be able to kind of have more equity in the conversations that they're a part of?
Well, you know, technology itself, and especially the kind of technology that we're seeing now, is such an equalizer. And this is one of the messages that we're trying to really talk about, is the opportunity that exists in things like artificial intelligence, you know, when artificial intelligence is responsibly introduced into an education setting, for example, how much of an equalizer that is for, you know, providing customized learning, providing, you know, teachings and supports in ways that kids that learn differently need to hear. So there is there's so much opportunity to democratize access and to you know, allow that, those opportunities to be more plentiful, but there's still an issue there about access.
Yeah.
So We're still doing a ton of initiatives around like getting technology into schools in the Arctic so that they have, you know, more access, or, you know, making sure that we're connecting the dots to those types of resources. So there's still a lot of work to do. I don't want to, you know, diminish how much inequity is still there. But once the access is there, there's going to be a, you know, there'll be some huge jumps forward.
How would you say that, you know, your definition of impact has changed from when you started the company to today? Like, how is that, has that been a sliding scale? And how has that kind of resonated with you?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because we think a lot about that. And I think it's just expanded, right? It's broadened. So in the early days, I think we were just so excited about being able to be in, you know, in front of 25,000 kids, or like, you know, 50,000 kids in 10 provinces. So it's just like that has been, you know, that was certainly very important for us to create that national sort of distribution channel. Now we look at it in, we still look at it that way. It's super, I mean, it's amazing. I'm amazed by it that, you know, 500,000 kids go through our programs every year. Mm-hmm. But importantly, you know, to us is what's their experience? How long did they spend with us? You know, is it something that changed their, like increased their confidence? Did it change the way they think about themselves vis-a-vis science and technology? So we're looking at, like, you know, how does this directly impact the economy in the future, for example. We've actually been able to document, you know, what the economic impact of our programs is down the road. And then we also look at it from, you know, I have been really committed outside of the mission of the organization to how we run. We're a charitable organization, but we're not... We're a unique charitable organization, I would say. And in the beginning, in the early days, we were extremely unique in the way that we were running, the partnerships we had with corporate, you know, with the corporate sector, the amount of technology we were incorporating. Like, we were, and I took a lot of pride in sort of like doing a doing the charitable organization in a different way. So that, you know, to me is also something that we have been able to contribute in terms of impact.
For people who aren't, you know, actively within a STEM field or working in a STEM field, what do you think it means to embrace the mindset of a scientist? Like, how can we all embrace the spirit of a scientist, especially today?
I mean, I think, like, all, you know, at the very, very basic level, it's what I said about, you know, what kids do innately and naturally, which is like being curious, constantly learning, right? Just a love of learning, being adaptable, you know, seeking answers, like attacking a problem from different, you know, different angles, you know, looking for information to sort of help you to understand something better. Like, it's not rocket science. I don't like that expression because rocket science is actually quite accessible. I hate when people say that. I'm like, nah, don't say that. Like, rocket science is something, like, you know, we could all be rocket scientists, as we saw yesterday. For the right price.
Yes. That's a whole other conversation.
But it's important, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, it does speak to, it speaks to science in a, you know, from a cultural perspective and in a moment perspective. But I think it's those things. It's like, we all have that, I think, natural curiosity about the way things work. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes that gets a little bit lost. So it's that, and it's also trying things. I mean, I get asked this question with, you know, slightly different, but like parents who are super nervous about the technology advancements and like, what do I do? My kid's doing all this stuff and I don't understand it. Like, I always say, like, you just have to try it. Like, it's just like, play with it. Like, download the app, download the ChatGPT, like, just try using it. It's incredible what an impact just that kind of going back to the basics of like playing with something.
Yeah. And these kind of tenets around embracing the spirit of like curiosity, you know, doing your research. I mean, these are things that can apply to any kind of role that you have in life, whether you are a beauty entrepreneur or a politician.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, running a soccer camp or something. Like, these are all things that can apply in so many different ways, and being malleable as an individual and being able to, yeah, and I don't know if we
I mean, every one of those things that you just said has so much science in it, and that's one of the things we talk to kids about, right? So, like, there's no more science and engineering than in the beauty industry, for example. Like, they are some of the most incredible innovators in terms of, you know, advancing research and advancing science in the country. You said politicians, like, we need more politicians with STEM backgrounds because they're the ones making the policies. Soccer coaches, I mean, there's so much parallel in the way that, you know, sporting happens and teams happen, and then teams of scientists, right?
Yep.
So there's that. That's kind of the point, is that, you know, there's so much benefit to, I say all the time, like, if you don't know what to study in university, because kids will off, like, just get a science undergraduate degree, because you could do literally anything else after that.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a good base.
So we're talking about kind of the traits that we can all kind of learn to embrace as people who are not directly working within in the science field or a STEM field. You're preparing kids not just to also work in science, but to think like scientists, you know, ask questions, solve problems, and work collaboratively. But, you know, conversely, in this landscape, do you think scientists also have to underscore their own skill sets as, like, effective communicators? Like, what are the human traits that you think scientists can also learn to be able to navigate this landscape that we're in right now? And if we also want to encourage more people to access STEM fields, like, what are the traits that they should have and in terms of how to navigate this landscape that we're in and being able to advocate for themselves and their work?
So I love a scientist that can communicate. Good. Because I think there is so much incredible research that is going on that even I have a biochemistry undergraduate degree, like, I've lived and work in science, that I read their, you know, the abstract, and I don't, why does it matter? Like, tell me why it matters to the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that it doesn't mean that they should go out and explain it to a kid in grade 5, but I do think that the vast majority of people working in science or doing that research should be able to tell us what it is and why it matters to the world. And I think that would have just such a dramatic impact on people's engagement and, like, support for science. And, you know, that doesn't mean, again, that doesn't mean they all, you know, they all need to be able to, you know, describe things in a way that, you know, we're all going to go and sign up for their university course. It's just the basics of, like, why it matters. And I think there's a very big gap. And that's why I actually think that ACTUA's had such great traction, is that there are very few people out explaining things in basic ways, right? So, like, tell me what it is. Like, why is artificial intelligence important? Like, what is it gonna do in school? Like, just give me the basics. Tell me about, you know, cybersecurity or like, all of these topics that people are, you know, generally a little bit intimidated by. So,
And these are, like, large, very complex topics that require a lot of nuance, but then it's, you know, they're kind of intimidating topics for people that don't necessarily, know how to talk about it. And to be able to distill that into a very straightforward, simple way of effective communication is not easy, but, like, a skill that is going to be so important for regardless of what field you're in as well.
And I think this is an opportunity for education, for changes to be made within the way that science is taught in school. And there are some amazing teachers that are doing this. But, like, just, you're doing the curriculum, you're talking to kids about whether it's math or science or whatever, tell them why it matters in the world. Tell them how it's connected. Talk to them about real world examples. Like, we all could have benefited from that. And, you know, I have a bunch of kids now, and I try all the time. I'm like, okay, I'll help you do this, but I want you to just be able to explain and understand what it does in the world or why it matters, you know, in to anyone else outside of this. So I just think it's it's an added step that I don't actually think is that difficult, but it's just, and there are a lot of people encouraging scientists to do that, right? It's being baked into grant applications, it's being asked of corporations, so it's changing.
Yeah. You know, you've built your company, ACTUA, in a space that often gets politicized, deprioritized. For other founders, because we have a lot of other founders in this room, people who are listening to the podcast, For other founders who are trying to advocate for the mission in, you know, difficult times or in difficult spaces, whether it's, you know, the erosion of public trust or shifting government priorities, as we're seeing on an hourly basis, yes. It feels like, different economic headwinds. What have you learned about navigating resistance and kind of staying the course?
Great question. For us, we've been lucky, and I say that, you know, one of the biggest challenges to running Actua and to growing it like we have is that, you know, we are generating revenue like every year. The budgets that we need to do to secure to do our work, like we haven't had core funding, we haven't had any kind of like, you know, traditional support. We don't generate our own revenue. So what that has meant, that's challenging, but what that has meant is that we have had to constantly be focused on being relevant. So like, and that has changed, like the core has stayed the same, right? We need strong science culture, we need science literacy, we need, you know, a workforce that is skilled to meet the needs of the future economy. But how we specifically talk about it and where the focus is has had to change pretty much on an annual basis to meet the interests of the people that we're partnered with or interested in. And we have been able to do that without compromising our values. I can say that, like, that's one of the things I'm most proud of is we have not compromised our values, but we have stayed extremely relevant over a 25-year period. And, you know, these things are not always in favor. And as we are seeing now in the space of, you know, the EDI, the attacks on EDI, and it's just talking about it, I find, in a way that is a little bit more palpable and, you know, that the audience that you're speaking to can engage with.
I mean, building on this kind of notion of relevance and being able to speak to your audience or your partners, you know, a lot of mission driven founders often find themselves putting out a lot of fires in different fronts, between, you know, public perception, funding, policy. What would you say is your advice for them for balancing kind of the long game of impact with the short term pressure to, you know, survive and stay relevant?
I mean, I think for me, it's about having an incredible team of people around me. And so I very much view the work that we do as, you know, the team that we have at Actua, the teams that are out in communities working day to day and face to face with youth. There are 100 fires a day for sure. And I think that it is just, it's a skill to be able to, you know, fight the fires, make decisions quickly, support your team when you need, you know, come in and out of the detail very, very quickly, but also to be constantly, you know, with your eyes sort of on the prize, or like, you know, I can do hockey analogies now that I like am in the hockey world, but like being ahead of the puck, like knowing where the puck is going, and, you know, getting there sort of first. And I feel like that is something that I've always been really good at, it's messy and it might drive people crazy, but like I know where we need to go a few steps in advance, and I can have one eye on that. And on the other side, sort of be like, okay, HR issue, there's all kinds of things when you're dealing with like youth programming and in the Arctic and, you know, just all the things, or funding, you know, changing funding landscape, or, you know, we work with a lot of corporations, things change there very quickly. So
you talk about just like, you know, it's kind of like a messy process. It's not perfect.
Super messy.
What's the kind of balance, or what's your perspective on the difference between progress and perfection, like iteration, and then always trying to keep something perfect? Is there such a thing as perfection, and how do you strive for that?
Okay, so if I answered this like 15 years ago, I would say like, yes, there is such a thing as perfection. I think there's such a thing as excellence, and I think that's the distinguishing factor that I have learned in my career as I go, is like, I love excellence and my team loves excellence. We attract people who are like, and excellence in the sense of like just excellence for our clients, excellence for the people that we're serving. You know, we have just so much passion for the work, but we also feel a deep sense of responsibility to use that time that we have with, you know, whether it's youth or teachers or parents, So I also think that I have become better at sort of kind of the good enough push on concept, right? Of like, okay, we gotta like, you know, this is good enough. Let's move forward. And I just think, you know, we don't have the luxury of dwelling on things for too long, and that's again something, a skill that you develop over time.
As someone that works in the world of STEM, but also just as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, what do you think is the most interesting thing that's happening in those two worlds? One as an entrepreneur, regardless of being in a STEM field, and one being in a STEM field.
I mean, I am fascinated and super excited about how artificial intelligence is going to change our whole business. So we're out in the field teaching kids about AI and how to use it appropriately and safely and how to use good judgment and, you know, sort of that is changing by the day. But as a national organization, I am extremely excited about how it will change our business model and how we do our work and how good we are at doing our work. And how, you know, the operationalizing or the efficiencies that we're able to create with that. So we are super lucky. Like, we have a direct tie into people leading in the field, like the, you know, the Microsofts and the Googles of the world, who allow us, not only support us financially, but like allow us access to these tools. And as a charitable organization, that's pretty special and unique. So I'm super, super excited about that.
Just as we're kind of wrapping up here, what would you say is kind of like your 5-year and your 10-year kind of goal for yourself, and what would you like to see within your organization, but also just within the landscape that we're in right now?
I mean, I want to just keep myself and my children alive. I like 5 years. God, okay, we're good. No, I do think about that though, because things are crazy and it's like a crazy world. But at Actua, I would say, you know, I'm very careful. Like, I have said lots of times, much to the chagrin, although now I have a board that's very on side with this, but like, I hate strategic planning in the traditional sense of strategic planning, because I think it's like, can be very limiting. I do love some sort of like looking at the horizon and knowing that, you know, we're absolutely doing the right work at this particular moment, and we're preparing ourselves for sort of what's coming, you know, what's coming next. It's not to say, you know, we still have a lot of work to do. Like, we've had a huge amount of growth. We need to, you know, shore up the foundation. Like, there's all the things that normal companies that have experienced growth go through. But I do think that, you know, if in 5 years we're still doing this good work and the impact is deepening and we're, you know, we've really expanded the mission through some of this thought leadership work, like going out and talking to people, and, you know, you don't have to come to our programs, but you could just engage with us in other ways, and that science culture in the country is thriving. Like, those are the things that I will, and the team, you know, that I work with will be super, super proud of 5 or 10 years from now.
And just, I guess, just as like a last question here for the audience and, you know, people here, but also listening, what do you think is a way that they can, like, just one small way that they can encourage the people in their lives or even themselves to, you know, embrace STEM or encourage other people, other women, other individuals to get into STEM, or just like the mindset of a someone that is science driven?
So I think if you have young people in your life that you care about, whether they're your own kids or other, you know, nieces, nephews, whatever, it's really, you know, encouraging them to keep those doors open. It's incredible how many decisions get made really, really early, like as early as grade 9, that close doors to a path to science in the future. And so, I mean, we're working on that, but that's one thing. I think that there's so much great science content out there that, you know, you can easily consume. There's some great podcasts. There's, you know, just people that are talking about these topics in ways that are much more accessible. And, you know, I think paying close attention to what is happening within, you know, with the attack on science, with some of these messages, and making sure that you're really constantly thinking about the information that you're consuming, right? And just being like, don't consume things that you know are are questionable. And that sounds
and
simple.
And don't share it.
I know. And don't share it. And don't, yes. And call it out when you see it. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing is mm-hmm. like, you know, we need to be calling out all of this stuff. Call it out when you see that science is under attack. Call it out when, you know, people are being misrepresented or ideas are being misrepresented. So, yeah. Everybody's got a voice here, for yeah. sure.
Jennifer, thank you so much for this wonderful. You've given me optimism for the future and for people in
good.
STEM. And thank you so much for the insight.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.